I'm filling in as the vice chair of the Bright TAC today. So I will call to order the Bright TAC meeting for November 12th. The next item on the agenda is for public comment. Is there anyone from the public here to comment? Okay, with there being none, we'll move to agenda item number 3, which is approval of the minutes from our September 10th TAC meeting, and those were distributed in your packets. Unless there's any discussion or amendments, I would entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
Move to approve.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor of approving the minutes from the September 10th meeting, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The minutes from our September 10th meeting are approved. Agenda item number 4 is solicitation of turnkey contract services for Bright Bus.
So just a quick update on that. We are in the process of re-procuring our service provider for our transit system. That the existing contract will expire on June 30th of next year, so we need to have a new contract in place on July 1 so that we can keep the buses running without any disruption. We have gone through a competitive procurement as we're required to by law, and we have received some proposals, are in the process of reviewing them now. We have an evaluation committee comprised of Leslie's representing both our commission and our BTAC, and we have an external member representing the Afton Express side of things. So we'll be working as a committee to evaluate those and hopefully have some more information for you guys at our, I guess, our January meeting.
Great. Are there any questions for Paula? Okay. Thank you. We'll move to agenda item number 5, which is Afton Express proposed schedule changes and updates.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, Leslie. So everyone is aware by now, we've been looking at the Afton Express schedule the past several months. We worked with a consultant to come up with a couple different schedule scenarios and ended up moving forward with one that we felt really captured all the criteria we were looking for and met all the goals. So in mid-September, we put that proposed schedule out for public comment. It was out until the middle of October. So today I'll just walk through some of the feedback that we received from the public, the changes we made from that feedback, and the implementation plan moving forward. So first, I'll just give a little synopsis of those changes. I did go over these last meeting, so we'll kind of just breeze through them, but feel free to stop me if you'd like any more details on those. So one of the main goals we wanted to be sure we met with the schedule was aligning with that 8 a.m. start time at UVA. That's something we were not currently serving. So now with the new schedule, morning trip 3 will get you to UVA at 7:40 or 7:45, so right after that 8 a.m. start. Another change is that now, overall, we have better alignment with start times at UVA in general, so morning trips now will correspond with start times of 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8, 8:30, and 9, and I think even 6:30 if you were like 1 minute late. So if your employer is okay with that. We now have additional coverage for 5 p.m. pickup time. Of course, that's a busy time. A lot of people are trying to head home at around 5 p.m. So now riders will have two options. There's a 5:10 pickup along with a 5:40 pickup. Additionally, the schedule now has more even spacing, filling in some of those large gaps that our current schedule does have. We also added in an additional trip in the morning, so I'll pull up the schedule soon, and you can see that'll be the fifth trip in the morning. We added that one. We also now have two express trips, so morning trip, the first one and the second one, the first morning trip and the first afternoon trip are both express. So in the morning, that'll just go from the Valley right to UVA with no other stops. That really made sense ridership-wise, and we were able to save a bit of money to save put that money to use on that extra trip in the morning. And last but not least, reverse commuters now have more options. So those going from Charlottesville to the Valley in the morning, they can make that commute with any of the morning trips rather than just having those two options that they currently have. So those were the highlights to the changes. What did the public have to say about those changes? So for comment submissions, we had a page on our social pinpoint platform. So all individuals were directed to submit and give feedback, so we funneled all submissions there. We did receive 77 responses. For the submissions, folks could rate the changes from 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst score and 5 being the best. Individuals could also provide open feedback, and if a respondent rated the changes lower than a 3, they were automatically prompted to tell us why they thought the schedule was so lowly rated. So in terms of the numbers, 71 of the 77 respondents actually gave the score rating, some just left comments. And of those 71, the schedule was rated on average a 3.8 out of 5. And with the majority of folks being very happy with the changes, 72% of those gave the schedule either a 4 or 5 star. 5 stars received the highest proportion of responses, with 35 of the 71. 4 stars was the second highest, with 16 out of the 71. And only 7 respondents gave the schedule a 1 star, and we were able to address a lot of those concerns. So I just pulled a few of the comments we received. I think the schedule is much more accommodating than the current one. It gives more options to commuters for traveling, and it makes more sense to space the trips out more evenly. So it was really nice to see that what we thought made sense, what the data said, and what we thought riders would want all aligned up well. So I'll pull up the new schedule here. Bless you. Let's see. So for those that were not 100% happy with the schedule, there were some clear patterns as to what they didn't like and what they wanted to see from the schedule. So a chunk of the 1 and 2 stars really corresponded to requesting or really pleading that we keep the 7:45 afternoon or evening pickup at UVA. It was moved to 7:40, but they wanted to stay at 7:45. Most of the folks that utilize this stop at this time are 12-hour shift workers at the hospital, and they said that extra 5 minutes is absolutely critical for them to be able to make that bus. So we spoke with BRT, and we all decided that would not be an issue. We could make that 5 minutes work, so we switched that back to 7:45. Another request we received, coincidentally, was also in regards to 7:45, but it was the 7:45 morning pickup at the Waynesboro Park and Ride lot. Folks said that trip was absolutely perfect, to please keep it. I'm not even going to ride anymore if you change this stop. So we took a look at that trip. It was actually a standalone bus, so changing that trip would not affect the schedule at all. And we did realize that if you do take the 7:45 pickup in Waynesboro, you get to work in time for an 8:30 start at UVA, which we thought some folks probably do start at 8:30 and not 8 or 9. So we decided to move forward with those changes as well. The only change that a few folks said that we were not able to accommodate was some folks requested pickup at UVA between 4:15 and 4:45 in the afternoon. But making these changes would have had a domino effect on the whole rest of the schedule. And we really would have ended up losing some of those goals that we worked for with this schedule. Currently, with our schedule today, we have UVA pickups at 4:05 and 4:10. With the new schedule, those move to 4:10 and 4:15. So we are hoping that some folks that will work for, but we weren't able to make any major changes on that one. So we did end up addressing about half of the 1 and 2 star ratings. Overall, it was really great to see that the time everyone put into it really paid off. I think obviously it can be hard to coordinate with you and one person, or forget it if it's a group of 5 or friends or family. So the fact that we had about a 70 to 80% really a good approval rating was awesome to see. Mm-hmm. So let's see, in terms of next steps, get one more slide here. Oh yeah, that's it. So next steps on the new schedule will go into effect December 1st. Our staff and BRT were all busy working to, you know, get everything ready for that implementation and to go live. And we're excited to launch the new schedule and have something that better aligns with commuter needs. So I'm happy to answer any questions on the new schedule or implementation.
Does anybody have any questions?
I'm just going to chime in and thank Danielle and Devin, who is not here. She's in New Zealand right now, having far more fun than a VTAC meeting. But they really worked hard and worked with our consultants to keep true to the goals that we set out when we looked at this. It's really tough with Appen Express because it's so new, and we have some loyal riders, and people have found ways to use it for reasons that maybe it wasn't intended for. And we had to make some hard decisions about what we were going to prioritize in order to really meet the needs of our largest employer and our largest funding partner, which is UVA. And so there were some concessions that, you know, might result in people not utilizing it anymore. If they were using it for, you know, shopping reasons, or they had a very particular start time, we had to really think through how we could accommodate, you know, the true nature of this being a commuter route, and emphasize that we understand it's the only connection that you really can get in public transit between here and Charlottesville, but the purpose is for commuters. If you can find a way to use it for what you need, that's an added bonus. But, you know, you can't change the schedule to meet 77 individual people's needs. But Danielle and Devin did a really good job of weeding through those comments and trying to find as many reasonable adjustments as possible. And VRT jumped in really quickly to help us recalculate and recalibrate and figure out if we could actually make those changes so that we didn't have to push this out any further. So thank you guys all for your hard work on that.
How many UVA variety stops are there? Just the one at the front at the Fort Main Hospital?
There's two stops along UVA's grounds. There's one by the hospital, and then one closer to some of the academic buildings. And they're, you know, about 80% of our riders are going to one of those two stops. Okay. Where they go after that, we're not as clear sometimes. The hospital's pretty easy because most of them are going there, but the academic stops, you know, they get on, maybe they get on a UTS bus and they go somewhere else in the area. But yeah, from what we can tell from our data, about 80% are going to UVA, so it made sense to really work with them to figure out what their needs were.
Yeah. Any other questions? All right, thank you for that. Now we'll move to agenda item number 6, section 5311, funding shortfall.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, sorry, I can speak up. So we're moving to agenda item 6, which is section 5311, funding shortfall.
I'm going to go ahead and give a little bit of a preamble before our guest of honor here speaks. I know that you guys have all gone through some form of BTAC 101, or you've been working with us long enough that you've kind of figured out how our system operates over time, but we don't really talk a lot about the budget and how all of these pieces come together, because it is very complex, and even our own staff struggle sometimes to keep track of all of these different funding sources and all of the different percentage rates that go along with them. But we have some major changes coming up on the funding landscape, and I want to make sure that you have at least a little bit of context before Grant talks about the rural side of things. So, and hopefully these slides are something you guys can take back and reference in the future if any of your directors or your localities have questions about it. It can be a little bit of a cheat sheet or a resource guide. So, in general, we get essentially two types of funding. We have urban funding for our routes that operate in the urbanized area, and we have rural funding for routes that operate in the rural area. Those come from the federal government, but we receive them in different ways. For urban, we get our money directly allocated to us from the Federal Transit Administration. The money that comes to us from there is based on congressionally approved formulas that are decided upon as part of transportation bills set by Congress. They primarily focus on population density, and so there's not a lot of change in those formulas over time because our population is not growing rapidly and there hasn't been a new surface bill reauthorized yet. So we get about $1.1 million a year in that type of funding for our urban routes. And our urban routes are the 250 connector, the routes in both Waynesboro and Stanton, the trolley, and our Bright Access routes. We also get state funding for our urban routes, and those are also calculated through a formula that the state sets, and that looks at Our agency size, our past performance, things like ridership, how much it costs us to operate per passenger. And then it's based on our previous years, or actually it's two fiscal years behind, but a previous year's actual budgeted expenses. So they look at what we actually spent, they account for our agency size and our performance, and then they determine how much we can have a state match. It is up to 30% of our previous budgeted amount. So, you know, we go in kind of knowing roughly what we're going to get, but once those performance metrics and things shake out, it might be slightly different, might be a little more, might be a little less. And that comes to us from the state. And then, of course, we have our local money for that that comes from all of you and your agencies. And that formula for how we determine how much each of your agencies pays in was designed and revamped recently and voted on by the BTAC a couple years ago. So that is a formula that you guys have some input in helping us shape and form and adjust over the years. But essentially it's based on the routes and how much of each route your area is served by. That is roughly 280,000, I meant to say, for the state funds we get about 600,000 for that, and then about 280,000 for local funds. So for our urban transit routes, this last year, this current year, the cost to operate was about $2.2 million. And I'm sure none of you are doing quick math, but those three numbers do not add up to $2.2 million. So there are some other funding sources in the mix. We do, you know, use the fare revenue that we get from our routes. It's a small portion of that, but it does help. And we have some income that comes from property leases. We lease out the upstairs of this building so that we can put that money back into transit and so forth. So that's kind of a snapshot of how our urban money comes into play. It is very similar for rural, with one caveat that our federal funding for the rural funds comes to us from the federal government through the state. So instead of allocating that money directly to the agencies, the federal government allocates a lump sum to the state based on an apportionment also decided on by congressional formulas. And then the state uses their own mechanisms to then distribute those funds across the state to all of the transit agencies. Historically, that has meant that essentially every transit agency could get about 50% of their operating costs from those federal funds, and maybe up to 80% of their capital costs through those funds. I say historically because Grant is going to talk about that a little bit here in a minute. But that is about $900,000 of our rural budget. And then the same thing goes for the state funds. It goes through that same formula that's established by the state and that same performance and previous year's audit. And that's about $375,000. And then same scenario for the local partners. The only difference with this is that Afton Express is considered a rural route, but you guys do not necessarily pay into Afton Express. It is funded by the three localities here on this side of the mountain, Stanton, Waynesboro, and Augusta County, and then our funding partners in Charlottesville and Albemarle. So that is not calculated into the formula that determines what you guys pay for Bright. So that is a large portion of our rural budget because it is a long-distance bus. The buses are more costly to maintain, but you guys are not shouldering the burden of that unless you are directly served by Afton Express. So it's about $94,000 a year in local match for the Bright system for rural and about $80,000 for Afton Express. And again, all of those numbers do not add up to 1.4 million either. They are closer. It is closer on the rural side than it is on the urban side at the moment. Momentarily, that might not be true anymore. But we also use this additional funding from fares and property, and we currently have a special grant called a Transit Ridership Incentive Program grant, and that is money that we got from the state that helps reduce the local match for the Afton Express for 5 years. So it increases the percentage that we have to pay over a five-year period so that we can kind of ease our funding partners into that cost. As the Afton Express is still relatively new, the costs are increasing and we need our ridership to catch up to that. And so we wanted to extend kind of that introduction period of local match for a couple more years. So the state graciously gave us some of that funding. So that $80,000 for this past fiscal year, about 60% of that is actually being paid by the state, and only 40% of that is coming from the localities. All right, that is all I'm going to say for now. I'm going to turn it over to Grant to talk about some of the rural challenges that we're seeing. There are a lot of changes, like I said, about both the urban and rural funding and the cost to operate, and so many variables happening right now. But Grant's going to talk about the rural formula because that is managed by the state. We have a lot less control over what happens on the urban side because those are congressionally apportioned dollars directly to us based on our population. Unless Congress changes the way that that formula is calculated in this next transportation bill, or we all of a sudden see a large influx of people moving to the area, we have limited control over that piece. The rural portion is much more state-oriented. They have a lot more control over how that money works. With that comes a lot of challenges as well. But that is really more relevant to what we're looking at right now. So Grant Sparks is here from DRPT. He is going to talk about what is going on at the state level with our rural funding for the next foreseeable future.
So. Great. Well, thank you, Paula, and thank you, Danielle, for inviting me. My name is Grant Sparks. I'm the Director of Statewide Transit Programs for the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation. I wish I could come with better news for you guys. I hate to present on bad news stories, but unfortunately, that's kind of where we are with our funding for rural transit right now. To give you guys an idea of the current rural transit landscape, we have roughly 20 rural transit providers in Virginia who offer 2 million rides per year. It's, I think, 500,000 hours per year and 10 million miles per year. All three of those figures, the riders, hours, and miles, have been growing significantly over really the last 10 years, which we think is a good thing. You know, rural transit is expanding. We're seeing more people use it. It's serving areas that have previously never had transit service before in Virginia. So we're meeting those needs, but as we're meeting those needs more, costs are becoming an issue. And with, you know, finite federal funding, very modest growth over the years, we're starting to run into an issue with our funds. So if you can flip to the next slide, please, Danielle. So how I'm going to kind of run through these slides is I'm going to give you all an overview of kind of the state of rural transit currently. I'll give you a little bit of information on a study or a strategy, I guess, that we started probably 8 to 10 months ago now to address this funding shortfall. So give you an idea of kind of the scope of that study and some recommendations coming out of the study. And then I'll wrap things up at the end with kind of a game plan for the next year, as well as, I guess, looking a little bit forward into the future, what our plans are. So this first slide, how is rural public transit funded in Virginia? Paula just kind of already gave the overview from a Bright perspective. From the state perspective, which is accurate, from the state perspective, and so this is taking it up a notch. So we basically lump everything, and the federal government does this too. It's operating expenses and capital expenses. Those are the two types of expenses that are eligible. And we have different match rates depending on the type of project. So for operating projects, generally speaking, the federal 5311, which is, that is the rural transit program funding from the federal government, that provides roughly 50% of all operating expenses for rural transit in the state. The state picks up on average about 25% of operating expenses, which leaves local expenses to 25%. I should also mention that this was pre-FY26. We adjusted this in FY26 because of our funding shortfall, but I'll get to that in a little bit. So again, 50% federal, 25% state, 25% local for operating. On the capital side, it's way more federal heavy. We've enjoyed an 80% federal match rate for capital for a number of years. DRPT would add 16% state funding on top of the 80%, which would leave a 4% local match on capital projects. And so we did these match rates for decades. And as rural transit has expanded, though, the federal funding, because it's finite, we just cannot afford to do this anymore. So the big change that we made in FY26 was we kept operating the same. On the capital side, we actually flipped it from a federal heavy to a state heavy program. And so we went up to 68% state on capital projects, leaving 28% federal, and we maintain that 4% local match. But I just want to give you guys a little context there that might make things later on make a little bit more sense in my slides. So if you could flip to the next one, Danielle. So how did we get here in terms of funding pressures? It was really three kind of main things that led to the position that we're in with funding. The first one is really there were some policy changes, as well as all of us know about COVID and kind of the impacts to the transit industry. But at the state and federal levels, DRPT received a large injection of federal and state pandemic relief funding. And we pushed all of that out to our transit agencies during the pandemic for obvious reasons. Unfortunately, all of that special money, that was all one-time revenues that we received, all of that money is dried up now. So we've blown through it, and we're now back to just our regular year-over-year funding. But then also, the 2020 census changed the urbanized area boundaries across the entire country. And so Paula mentioned how Bright gets urban and rural funding. The urban funding is based on actual boundaries that the U.S. Census draws. And those boundaries did change after the 2020 census. Usually what we see in a census is that more the urban areas expand. And usually a rural transit agency would flip to a urban transit agency. There were some subtleties this year on the calculation and methodology for how urbanized areas were even defined, which because they did that, the census, it actually flipped to urban transit agencies to rural. So we saw the total opposite of what we were expecting. And unfortunately, when they flip to rural, that means that those costs are now on the state. They need to enter the 5311 program. And we saw a very small increase in federal funding despite picking up two new transit agencies. So COVID funding running out and picking up two new rural transit agencies certainly put some additional pressure on our 5311 program. COVID also really changed the entire transit industry from a cost perspective. Vehicle costs, so buses, went up significantly. We're talking like 30 to 50% increases over those years. So huge increases for vehicle costs. And then operating costs also went up pretty significantly, mostly labor, but also insurance, really across the board, operating costs increased. So our federal money was just not going as far anymore because of that. And then quite possibly the biggest strain on our 5311 program has been a surge in, an increase in interest among rural areas that have historically never even had public transportation. All of a sudden, it really started to flip over in like 2018, 2019. We did some demonstration projects with certain transit providers in the Commonwealth that got a lot of media attention because of the technology that they were using. And those two agencies started to field a lot of calls from counties and towns in Virginia that had no public transportation. They were like, this sounds like something that we are interested in. How do we do it? And so we've been helping those communities bring public transportation online, but that has been putting some strain on our federal funding. So all of those kind of factors combined is what led to the situation that we're in now. So if you could flip to the next slide, please, Danielle. So in terms of observations, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this slide, but the big takeaway here is that for the last 3 to 4 years, we have been obligating more federal funding, so putting more federal 5311 funding on projects than we're receiving in new federal money in that year. So what I mean by that is, looking at the table here, first column, in FY24, we had $54.1 million of federal 5311 funding to use in that year. And that includes new revenue, it includes unused old revenue. It's basically our total amount that we had available. In that year, we put $36.1 million on projects. So that was $36.1 million assigned to all of our rural transit agencies in the state that year. So that left $18 million for us to carry forward into the next year, FY25. When you look at FY25, the total revenue we had available to us was 43.2. We obligated 33.7, leaving us 9.4 to carry over to the next year. And that bottom row is really the trend here that's problematic. Year over year, we're carrying over less and less and less. It's going down. And we are projecting that as of FY27, we're going to have no money to carry over. And that's the problem. When we're putting more money on projects than we're receiving every year, eventually there's going to be a point in time where we just can't afford to do that anymore. And that's, we're projecting that that point in time will be FY27. So next slide, please. This is kind of just a different way to think about it. This is just a bar graph that shows just a visual representation of what we're talking about. The dark blue is total new revenues received from the federal government. And what this shows is that the federal government funding in new revenues is pretty flat. I mean, we're talking 2 to 3% increases year over year. It's consistent. But does not increase very much. It's the royal blue, which is the concerning part, which that's that carryover balance, and that's what we're cutting into at a good clip year over year. And then you can see here that the projected deficit on an annual basis moving forward, starting in FY27, coming up and going into the future. So if our projections hold true, through FY31, we are projecting a shortfall in federal funding of $33 million. And that's total among the when you add up all those years combined. So obviously not a good situation. So there's a whole lot of uncertainty now, and certainly with a new administration coming in at the state level, we got to catch them up to speed on this issue. But we're looking at our FY27 revenues, how much we're going to have available, looking at the needs from all of our rural transit providers, including Bright. And we think that we can maintain kind of status quo for one more year in FY27. We won't know until all the grant applications are received on February 1st of 2026. That's the point in time where we see all the needs come in and what everybody's requesting in terms of funding. But we think that we're going to be able to just keep everything normal, 4% local match on capital, roughly 25% local match on operating for one more year. But for FY28 and beyond, that's when we have to start preparing and planning for alternatives on what are we going to do to address this funding gap. So that's really what led us to start this strategy and plan, is to engage our transit providers that provide service to rural areas and come up with a plan to implement starting at FY28. So right at this next slide, if you can flip to the next one, Danielle. So we really, I think it was May, April, somewhere around that time frame, we initiated this strategy or study to address that funding shortfall. And so the four kind of key objectives of that study was to identify statewide goals and priorities for our rural transit program. That's high level stuff. Objective two was to understand what the cost drivers are for all those increases to our rural transit program, as well as identify cost control methods that can be applied. Objective three, which is what I'll spend the most time going over with you all, and honestly, this was kind of the key for this whole effort, was to define how DRPT will prioritize the allocation of limited federal 5311 funding to our rural areas based on the goals and priorities that were identified. And then objective four, to identify potential long-term strategies for how DRPT can seek to remedy funding shortfalls with additional funding sources. So we do want to look out further into the future as well as how can we bring more funding into the Commonwealth that otherwise would not go to all of our rural transit agencies. So next slide, please. So one of the key components of this strategy was the development of what we called RSAG, or it was a Rural Strategy Advisory Group. We didn't just want to do all of this in a vacuum. We could have come up with, you know, some solutions, but we felt like we needed to talk to our rural transit agencies and other stakeholders to help us develop these solutions. And so we created a group of, I believe it was 10 representatives from different geographies. I think it was 7 or 8 rural transit agencies were represented on RSAG. Ann Cundy from CSPDC Bright was on the RSAG group, as well as representatives from the Virginia Association of Counties, Virginia Municipal League, and others. But we met as a group about monthly to just work with our consultants who we hired to help us with this, to develop solutions and kind of vet them through that RSAG group. But this was a key component of that study effort, just in terms of stakeholder engagement. And if you can move to the next slide, Danielle. Another kind of aspect of this strategy was we didn't just want to talk to everyone in Virginia about how we address this issue. We wanted to see what other states were doing. One, to see are other states dealing with this funding crisis for federal funding, but also understand how they use their 5311 funding. So what we found, this is just a high-level summary of the findings and talking to our peer states, which we interviewed, I think it was 7 or 8 of them. Every state is using their 5311 funding differently. That was not surprising. Some only use it for operating expenses. Some use it for capital. Some use it for both, like we do here in Virginia. Some allocate it using a formula. They kind of mirror the federal government formula and just distribute it all to the rural transit agencies in the state. Others do, it's more discretionary based, and so they have prioritization processes. In Virginia, we mostly do prioritization and a budget-based approach for operating, which I'll get into here in a little bit. Some states that we talked to were able to tap into other federal funding sources. So 5339, for example, in Virginia, we have made a decision historically to reserve that for our smaller urban transit agencies. So we, at the state, we have the ability to give that money to rural or small urban transit agencies. And because the 5311 program historically has always been flush, we've reserved it for our small urbans. But we can identify that funding to use for our rural transit agencies as well. There were also some federal highway funds that were used by other states to support rural transit. That would involve a conversation with VDOT, who manages all those federal highway funds, but we did make note of that. But kind of the big takeaway on the third bullet here was that other states, when we asked about their local match rates, Other states were blown away by how low the local match rates are here in Virginia. We're talking like 3, 4, 10 times in some instances, the local match rates were far higher in other states than in Virginia. So that was really the big takeaway from the entire peer state interviews, was that the 4% local match on capital was the best in the country, basically. And we have other states that we talk to, and we can pretty much guarantee that that 4% local match rate is the best in the country right now. So if you could flip to the next slide, Danielle. So so now we're going to talk a little bit about the proposed strategies that we developed with that RSAG group, with our consultants, to kind of address the funding issue. And so we'll start with funding strategies. And this is, so the funding strategies are strategies where we can kind of move our money around a little bit, or bring in some additional money. So the first one is to allow a higher state maximum match rate on rural capital projects. I know that's kind of a lot of information, but I mentioned earlier that in FY26, we flipped the capital distribution and match rates from 80% federal, 16% state, 4% local, to 68% state, 28% federal, and 4% local. We could not go any higher than 68% on the for state, because Commonwealth Transportation Board policy says that 68% is the max that the state can contribute to a transit capital project. So that's written in policy. We're going to talk a little bit more about this in a little bit, but we could, in number one here, a potential strategy could be to go to the Commonwealth Transportation Board and ask for that rate to go higher on the state side. So what that would look like is a change to our current policy, possibly ask the CTB to go up to 90% state, could be even 96% to preserve that 4% local match. Another funding strategy, and definitely don't want to bore you guys with the details on this one, but the Virginia Breeze, which is our inner city bus service in Virginia, it is funded through the 5311 program. That is a federal requirement, but federal regs also allow states to seek a waiver from the governor if there are other funding sources that can be identified to pay for inner city bus service. You can seek a waiver from the governor, give it to the federal government, and then basically free up that federal funding that goes to the Virginia Breeze. So that is one option that we're looking at. And then the third funding strategy here, I mentioned the VDOT federal highway funding. We could certainly talk to VDOT and maybe negotiate with them to get some of that federal highway funding to support rural transit. But then we could also potentially look at reusing or figuring out a way to change how we distribute 5339 funding. Mentioned how that goes currently to small urban transit agencies, but we could potentially give it to rural transit agencies as well. And so those are kind of the three key funding strategies that we've identified. But the real kind of meat and potatoes of this entire effort are these program management strategies. So I'll flip through these here. There are three of them, starting with strategy one. This one looks at how we prioritize our 5311 funding. And this is, do we use it for just for operating? Do we use it for operating and capital? So next slide. So option one, and I should also mention that these slides were presented not just to the RSAG group, which Ann was a part of, but we also presented this information to the Community Transportation Association of Virginia. This is really a bunch of the rural transit providers in Virginia attend a conference every year, and we presented at that conference these kind of strategies to get kind of a read of the room in terms of what the preferences were. And so first kind of a strategy, again, was how do we prioritize our 5311 funding? Option one was to prioritize it for operating. So basically, we would fund all of our operating needs across the state first before we use any of it for capital. That's option one. Option two was to reserve a little bit intentionally every year for capital. Mostly use it for operating, but just intentionally shave off a portion for capital. If you could flip to the next slide, please, Danielle. We heard pretty much from everyone that they wanted to prioritize it for operating purposes. The rationale being, we heard this from a number of transit agencies, that if the local match is going to be increasing, it is way easier to get additional local match for capital compared to operating. And so they wanted us to push as much of the federal funding to operating and potentially increase the local match on capital if it comes to that. So that was one big takeaway. Strategy two is focuses specifically on operating and how we allocate our federal 5311 operating funds. So the two options here, again, we presented this to RSAG and the Commonwealth Transportation Association of Virginia group. The two options were kind of keep how we currently allocate 5311 operating, which is a budget-based approach. Bright, as well as all the other rural transit providers in Virginia, they apply for 5311 operating funds every year by giving us their proposed budgets. We look at the budgets, we validate the budgets, and then we cut a 50% 5311 operating grant to each agency based on the budgets. So it's a budget-based approach. There's honestly not much cost control in that approach because we're just taking your budgets as they come and giving you a 50% operating grant. Unfortunately, you know, that's been a decent practice. It's worked for us in the past. Unfortunately, though, when we can't afford to give everybody 50% in a year, which we're projecting starting in FY28, the amount and the timing of when we give everybody the amount gets kind of dicey. So I don't want to spend a whole lot of time here, but the predictability goes down significantly when our funding is, when we can't fund everybody at 50%. And what that looks like is if we go with option one, Bright would submit a 5311 operating application on February 1st. We would look at everyone's operating applications and budgets in March, February, March, April. And we would look at how much money we're getting from the federal government in that time frame as well. And then as we're creating our six-year improvement program and taking it to the Commonwealth Transportation Board, we identify a number for each rural transit agency, which will likely be less than 50%. What that number is will vary every single year, and rural transit agencies won't know what that number is until April when we present our SIP to the CTB. And so that's obviously not ideal. It's kind of a guessing game. Option two, on the other hand, would be far more predictable, but it would involve the creation of a formula. So we would have a predetermined formula. What the factors are used in that formula is unknown at this point. It could be similar to how we do our state formula, but it could be ridership, hours, miles, costs. There are a number of different variables. But if we had a predetermined formula, and we also know generally how much federal funding we're getting year over year, we would run that funding through a formula, and as early as the fall, like right now, next year potentially, we would be able to say, Bright, you're gonna get X amount in 5311 funding. Radar, you're gonna get X amount of federal 5311 funding. So everybody would be able to know pretty much what they're gonna get. You know, mostly predictable, way far in advance. And you can even do this, you know, 4 or 5 years in advance. You'd have a pretty predictable set amount of 5311 funding that each agency gets. So we presented these two options to the groups, and if you can flip to the next one, everybody thought that predictability was far better. Formulas are tough to create from scratch. Everybody has different interests on what that formula might look like. So that's definitely something to consider. But this is definitely where we are likely going to be headed, is to create a formula for our 5311 funding starting in calendar year 2026. So the third and final strategy here, and this one was, we already knew what the responses were going to be on this one, but if we're going to prioritize our 5311 funding for operating, what happens with capital? The local match is likely going to be increasing there. We want to increase our state share. I mentioned going for a CTB policy to increase the state share from 68% to say 80, 90, or 96. So if you could flip to the next slide, the two options that we presented to our rural transit providers and RSAG was, would you prefer a 10% local match on capital projects or a 20% local match on capital projects? I guess the downside to a option one, which was the 10%, was that we just can't fund as many projects. If we're going higher with our federal and state money, potentially, there's just not going to be as much federal and state money to go around if the local match is only 10%. If the local match is 20%, we'll be able to preserve some federal and state money and fund more projects. But we also understand that generating any local match is not easy. So if you flip to the next, the consensus was option one, which was to go after a 10% local match as opposed to a 20. So those were kind of the three big kind of takeaways from our study. But we also, as I mentioned, kind of in the study scope, our consultants helped us identify some cost mitigation strategies. I didn't even create a slide for these, but they, from what I recall, it was to make certain operating expenses ineligible. So we could say admin expenses, administrative expenses have to be funded with pure local and state, no federal funding. That's just a hypothetical. We could also, let me see, I think I've jotted down a couple others that we identified. Yes, for expansion projects. So oftentimes our rural transit agencies, they want to, you know, create a new route, expand to a new county or whatever. What we identified for cost mitigation strategies was to guide those expansion projects through a different program that we have called the Demonstration Grant Program, and keep them in, and that Demonstration Grant Program is only state funding. And so if we can keep those new services in that state program that has a healthy balance, that'll just allow us to ease our way in, ease those services into our federal programs. And then another cost mitigation strategy that we identified, potentially we could employ a growth cap. So no one rural transit agency could get more funding, say, over 5% year over year. We have had some rural transit agencies grow pretty rapidly, very quickly. But you also have to understand that some only have one route. And if they want to do two, that's double the expenses. And so we want to be mindful of the really small agencies as well if we're going to do any sort of growth cap. So what does all this mean? And this is kind of just tying it all together here. Again, the plan right now for FY27 is status quo. Keep all the local match rates that we've had for years intact. If we get all the applications and we cannot afford to do that, our plan is to fund operating first, doing that budget-based approach. And then when we get to our capital applications and projects, we'll go as far down the list as we can, funding them at 96% state and federal funding. And then when we run out of money, we're going to go to our rural transit agencies and say, hey, we can fund it at 68% state, but can you do the 32% local match? Because there's no other match to go around. So we want to give that option. We don't want to just assume that our rural transit agencies cannot afford 32% local match, but it's going to be pretty hard, I think, in most cases. So that's the plan for FY27, but for 28, we have to really, in like February of this coming year, start on what a 5311 operating formula might look like and work with our rural transit providers on creating that formula. We're going to pursue that CTB capital policy change to increase the maximum state match rate from 68% to likely 90%. I think that's where probably where we're heading. I didn't touch on this earlier, but we're also taking a close look at the useful life for certain vehicles. I know you guys don't purchase vehicles, so I don't want to get into the weeds on that. But then the last bullet point here, and this is something we started to do about 5 years ago. FTA has a bunch of discretionary funding opportunities. And we've been pretty aggressive in the last 5 years on making sure that we're always applying for discretionary federal funding. Because when we bring federal discretionary funding into Virginia, that offsets basically 5311 funding. So it frees up 5311 funding every time we bring those special funding sources into Virginia. So we're going to continue to be aggressive with those application submissions to FTA. So I know that was an incredibly technical presentation. I apologize for it. This whole effort is very technical, and I know that the transit industry in general is very technical. Different programs, different match rates, different requirements, so I apologize for that. But I don't know, Paul, if you wanted to wrap it up at all. Or
yeah, I have a couple slides here to wrap up to kind of bring that into context for what that means specifically for Bright. And we're kind of seeing changes coming at us from all different directions. So this 5311 shortfall is just one of the elements of uncertainty that we're facing. Like I mentioned, we're also facing some uncertainty about the federal level. We don't have control over the urban money that comes in. We just get that apportioned to us, and we find out what that dollar amount is going to be, and that is it. If our budget is more than that, too bad. That's all that's coming. The current surface transportation bill, the IIJA, expires next year, and so the next federal fiscal year, Congress will have to pass a new transportation bill. We have no idea at this point what that will look like. That could change the formulas. It could change the way that money flows to us for urban. Hopefully it wouldn't be any less than what we're currently getting, but the IIJA was very transit friendly, and we don't know if the next transportation bill is going to be as friendly. So we don't really know what to expect with the federal urban money. There's not a ton we can do about that right now, except for those who are able to lobby. We are not. Continuing to stay engaged with our congressmen and women and talk to our, you know, lobbying agencies to ensure that transit stays a priority in the next surface transportation bill. At the state level, in addition to the rural funding challenges, they're also undergoing a change to how the state formula allocates funds to us. And I didn't touch on that because that is even more complicated than what Grant just talked about. And we're pretty far along in that process, so I think we'll be seeing what the outcome of that is in January or so when the CTB meets. But that would essentially take the portion of money that the state gives us for urban and rural funds, and that formula might be a little bit more performance-based. So instead of basing it just on our budget, it could look at, you know, putting more of an emphasis on things like how efficient is our system running? How much does it cost us to run a bus per passenger? So in a rural area or a small urban like us, that's particularly challenging because our buses are not carrying a lot of people at the same time. So, you know, when the 250 connector goes from Stanton to Waynesboro, it costs the same amount to run that bus whether there's two people on it or 10. So if we have to start considering how that efficiency is going to affect our funding, we would not be as competitive in that regard. So there are some strategies we have to look at there about how we want to make our system more cost effective or efficient. But at the end of the day, public transit is public service. It's not a cost effective industry. And then that will be, like I said, that'll be presented to the CTB in December. That is likely going to be voted on and adopted in January of 2026, which will go into effect the following year. what you can do in regards to that is, you know, engage in that process if you want, and let our CTB members know that how this could potentially harm rural agencies. We've been tuned into this process as they develop the formula, the proposed formulas, and as of now, it does not appear that it's going to hurt Bright significantly, but that remains to be seen year over year. So for the near future, the new formula shouldn't drastically reduce the amount of money we're getting, but we just don't know what to expect in years 3, 4, 5, and so on. And then at the local level, obviously all of these things might lead to increases in funding that we have to ask you all to contribute to the system. And that's what I really wanted to bring Grant here to talk about was, you know, DRPT is a fantastic partner for us. They are doing pretty much everything they possibly can to mitigate the impact to us. But there may be some areas where that's just not possible and that we might have to see an increase on the percentage of funding that you all pay into the system. And what happens if that takes place, you know, we'll have to have conversations with everybody, and we're hopefully gonna try to put together some options so that it's not just us coming to you and saying, please give us more money, but here are the different options and letting you guys have some input into how we proceed with our system.
If I can just add to that, so the CTB policy change to increase the state share on capital, we want to get that done as soon as possible in the new administration, so that you all can start preparing for that. I would hope that in the first half of calendar year 2026, we'll be able to go to the CTB with that. But it really depends how quickly we can catch the new administration up to speed on the issue. There's going to be a new Secretary of Transportation. They set the agenda for the CTB meeting, so it's a little unknown now. But I want everybody to understand that we're going to try to do it as quickly as we can so everybody can start.
But the merit formula is likely going before the board in January.
Very likely, yes. So, in the current administration.
Yes. So yeah. A lot of moving parts and a lot of policy pieces. The other thing that is kind of the biggest component that we're looking at right now is that, like I mentioned, we're procuring a new contract for our transit provider. As the costs of transit have increased over the past 5 years, our contract has stayed relatively the same, and that's really great for us. Not so much necessarily for VRT, who has been kind of their hands tied in providing the service for us at a pre-negotiated rate, even though the cost to operate is going up beyond that. So rightfully so, we know that when we procure this new contract that will go into effect next year, it is likely going to increase our cost of contract significantly. I would say far more than we have seen year over year in the past decade. And that's really, I mean, it's not a good thing from a funding perspective, but it is a good thing because that means that we can adequately fund the service and that service can be better and we can be delivering the service to the quality that we, you know, strive to, because we're not trying to short our contractor and not give them the resources they need. So that'll go into effect next year. And once we know what that contract rate will be, which will be probably by the end of this year when we finish that procurement process, if you want to flip to the next slide, we are working on several different budget projection techniques. So once we know what our current budget is going to be for FY27, I will then take that and build out probably a 5-year projection based on status quo. And then we will also build out some projections based on all of the different options that Grant just mentioned. So if we have to increase local match to 10% or to 20%, what that would look like for each of you. And we will reach out to you in December, probably starting with the localities and the larger agencies first, and have meetings with you to talk about what those changes will look like. We know that you guys need to know far in advance to inform your budgets. And we also know that your budgets are not finite. They're not, you know, making a change to your budget is not as easy as just saying, okay, Bright needs more money, we'll give it to them. So we're gonna come to you with some options, and, you know, I will be frank that not all of those options are gonna be great options. It could be that we have to increase the local match to be able to continue to fund service as it stands. We might have to look, hopefully not, at reducing service or changing what service looks like in your area. And we want to put that choice to you as much as possible, because we know that as much as everybody would love to continue to just keep things as they are and continue to grow, if your budget doesn't allow for it, we want you to have an option to say, transit is still important to us. We want to make sure that these parts of our, you know, regions are still covered, but is there a different way that we can do that that might be less, you know, expensive? Or can we, you know, reduce services to a point where we're still providing essential transit, but maybe cutting in some of those areas where it's not as highly utilized? That is the last option we want to pursue. We really don't want to cut anything, but I don't want to just come to everybody and say, please give us more money, and that's the only choice. So we'll be having some conversations with everybody over the next couple of months. I know that the localities, your budget cycles are coming up for FY27. For FY27, what we would expect is really going to just be that increase in the contract cost. And then FY28 and beyond will be where things get a little bit muddy. So we'll continue those conversations with you as we learn more information. I know DRPT will continue to advocate for the transit agencies. And, you know, a lot of states don't actually have a separate agency that manages their transit. It's all rolled into their DOT. Thankfully, we have DRPT. I don't know if any of you have submitted any smart scale applications, but if transit were funded the way that transportation and highway projects are funded, we would be in bad shape, because we are just not going to be competitive as a small urban or rural area. So even with the changes that DRPT is looking at, it is still, you know, really supportive of our goals and our needs, and we'll do the best we can to communicate that stuff transparently to you. So with all of that in mind, in the context, does anyone have any questions for me or for Grant?
How much clarity do you think you'll have after you go to the CPP with that percentage increase request on, is it?
Capital.
Capital from 68 up to whatever percentage.
How much clarity are we?
As far as the potential effects, I guess, on the local match.
Yeah, I mean, because this effort, we're prioritizing operating the 5311 funds for operating. I think we're bracing ourselves for not putting a dollar of 5311 funding on the capital side. And so if we're not able to use any federal funding on capital, we want to raise the state share of capital expenses as high as we can go. We're thinking 90% might be the sweet spot. But we could potentially go as far as 96% to keep the 4% local match intact. We're just assuming that CTB won't like the idea of funding 96% on a state project or on a capital project through state funds. But once we go to the CTB, I mean, we're not gonna put something forward that we're not pretty sure is going to get passed. We'll have some conversations in the behind the scenes, and certainly we will tell all of our transit providers what we're pursuing so that you guys can also possibly talk to your CTB members and ask for their support. Hopefully it's a good number. But yeah, once that, if that CTB policy is changed to increase the state share, that's what it's gonna be. Like, we're gonna fund everything at 90% state, because we don't have to thankfully worry, at least right now, about state revenues. We're pretty good on that side.
I did not go into detail on what we get from the capital side of things, because that's a really convoluted concept as well. But capital projects are typically, you know, purchasing vehicles or, you know, property or you know, concrete projects and spaces. And we don't own any of our vehicles. Our contractor provides those. However, that cost that they incur for purchasing those vehicles gets populated into our contract cost. So that hourly rate that we pay per service hour accounts for both their cost to operate and the vehicles that they've purchased. That helps us in this case quite a bit, because we are less dependent on the capital funding for our buses than other agencies are. And half of our contract costs can be charged to capital because of that. And that is still a smaller portion of our budget than it would be if we had to just straight up put all of our vehicle costs into capital. On the flip side of that, this facility is aging. It's, you know, about what, 11 or 12 years old now. And we are going to see some improvements that we'll need to make over the years to come. And so capital is where we would be able to apply for that kind of funding. So it's important for us as an agency to continue to build our reserves in our bank accounts and our savings so that we have contingency, so that if the air conditioning unit in this building breaks and we have to submit to DRPT for funding that, and they come back and say, we can only give you, you know, 32% or something like that, that we still have the ability to fund those kinds of improvements and keep the lights on here. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag. We're you know, a little bit more fortunate on the capital side of things. Operating, if they're prioritizing operating, that really helps us quite a bit because of the way our system is structured. But all of that still kind of remains to be seen as how that'll play out over the next couple of years.
Are there any other questions? All right, thank you so much for the update.
Thank you guys for your patience and listening to all of that. And if you think of questions after the fact, or if you're, any of your colleagues or directors or city managers have questions, please don't hesitate to reach out. And be glad to kind of do a smaller version of this one-on-one with anybody who wants to understand that.
Great, that's helpful. Thank you. So we'll move to agenda item number 8, which is other business.
We have our contractor update.
Oh, sorry, yeah, let's skip that. Number 7, contractor update.
Didn't want to short Steve on his chance to tell us.
Sorry. Act to follow, but I'm going to try. Our staffing is kind of leveled off. We had some really good opportunities in there, so we're finding our way. Last time we mentioned we had 2 returning employees. We've got another one have returned as driving, and we've got another one relocating back to the area. They've been away for a while, so they're going to come join us. And we always welcome anybody who has an interest in driving for us, so we pursue those as well. Ridership trends are kind of flat. Overall, Acton continues to enjoy increased ridership though. And route performance, we're working on various augmentations to routes and researching and stuff as far as additional stops or changing the way they go. So we're doing some background information for that and probably roll that out in the next BTAC or so. And fleet maintenance, the downtown trolley is in the shop waiting on a part. I'm pretty sure I saw that part earlier today, so I would think that would roll out tomorrow, I'm hoping. The rest of it is just routine maintenance and stuff. There's nothing in there waiting to be fixed or waiting to get out the door. So just oil changes, inspections, things of that nature. So that's all I got.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, now we can move to agenda item number 8 for other business, the Stanton Citizen University presentation and Augusta County Community Academy presentations.
Yeah, I'll take that one. So Devin and I presented on the BRIGHT system at Stanton Citizen University. That was 2 weeks ago. They've had a few cohorts now, and it's a group of citizens. They apply for the program and learn all about the city and different departments and services, so they were really interested to learn about BRIGHT and how the system works, how it's funded, how we operate. So they're very engaged, lots of questions, so that was fun. And then next week we'll be presenting again, Augusta County starting up the same kind of Citizens University program. So this will be their first cohort. We heard they're very chatty as well, so it should be a good time.
Great, thank you. Okay, I guess we can move to agenda item number 9, which is adjournment. But before we do that, just to review the meeting calendar for 2026. Those set our meetings, and I guess those are what we plan to advertise.
Yes, and you all should see those meeting invites go out within the next month. The only thing we wanted to touch on was that it's in a year, so who can plan that far? But it is Veterans Day week, so I don't know if we potentially want to move that by a week or just a few days or anything. So I don't know if anyone had any initial thoughts today. I'm assuming not, but if anyone does, you can bring it to the table.
but we can talk more about that this whole coming year.
Sure. Plenty of time.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. I'll add too, we haven't finalized all of the details yet, but you guys should be getting a save the date email sometime in the next month. We will be holding a kind of a state of transit event in January at Augusta Health. They're graciously letting us use their conference space. And so that may replace the January meeting, depending on what we have on the January agenda, or may, you know, be around the same time as that. But we'll send that out to you. We hope to give kind of a presentation, not so much on the depressing stuff of what our funding is, but all of the wonderful things that we've accomplished in this last year and what's on the horizon to come in the next year or two. And we really want that to be more of a celebratory kind of reception. So we'll be sending that out to you all as members of the BTAC for a save the date. But we also want to invite your city councils, your board of supervisors, and for our community partners, you know, anybody at your agency, high-level directors, or folks that you think would really enjoy learning about what's going on in transit. So we may be reaching out to you with some requests for contact information if there's people beyond just you from your organization that you want us to be sure to include. But that should be a fun event to look forward to and a nice way to bring in the new year. And as we all bounce back from our holiday, all our holiday vacations, start the new year.
Right, thank you. Unless there's anything else to come before the BTAC or any objection, we can stand adjourned. Thank you.